Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:41 PM. That is Central Time. Today is June 28th. And I thought that I'd kick off with 10-year treasuries. And the yield was down today. Now, this is still a downtrend overall. We have a sequence of lower rally highs that's unbroken since the middle of May. There's still a downward bias since the peak at the end of March. There have been a couple of stabs on the upside. The first half of May lasted for 4 days. The most recent was for about 5 days. If we get downside follow through tomorrow, well, then that's going to embolden the bulls even further. When we look at the futures contract and throw it the other way around, this is still ranging overall. The step on the chart as a result of the contract change looks more like a range. When we think about it in terms of the 30-year, well, it looks more like an uptrend. And this is clearly helping to support the high growth end of the market. So the NASDAQ was in additional upside in here today, pushing new high ground and remains in a reasonably consistent advance. Now, it was looking a little wobbly at that failed upside break back in April, and then it came back down but did not break the sequence of higher reaction lows, and subsequently has pushed through the 14,000 level. So as long as it is continuing to hold that move, well, then we're still in an uptrend overall, and we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And it's certainly a return to form for the growth sector. So the IPO index is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs, and it's been up on consecutive weeks, and it's at a new closing recovery high now for the week. So this is looking more impressive overall, and it suggests that there is ample demand for the higher growth end of the market, and that is most particularly true when yields are compressing. Then when we look at the China version of the IPO index, so this it covers companies that have just listed and then also some that have been around for a while that have got higher momentum. So it does tend to favor more momentum issues. And it's now starting to firm from the region of the trend mean. And following a 35% pullback, it's understandable that there might be some pause and for reassessment. But if the IPO index is doing well and the Chinext index is also doing well, well, then that's suggestive of continued demand for speculative issues. The Chinext index has rebounded pretty impressively over the course of the last few weeks, so it's now right in the region of its peak. And it suggests that despite the fact that the Chinese government is leaning on parts of the large cap tech sector, there's still support for the smaller cap tech sector. And that's particularly true of the Chinext index. They're generally smaller companies. And then when we think about big IPOs, well, DiDi Chuxing is about to IPO, and it's going to have a depository receipt in the USA. So that's likely to be greeted with enthusiasm by investors. It's the Chinese version of Uber, and it's a good example of how China has shepherded companies that are direct copycats of Western success stories through all the way to IPO. Uber is on the cusp now of attempting to become profitable. So they are raising prices, and that has been really quite abundantly clear. So now what they're in fact doing is competing head to head with the taxi sector, and simply their model is that they're providing a more convenient service, but it's certainly no longer a cheaper service. And then the question is that going to fly with consumers, and will consumers pay that premium? They certainly seem to be at least willing to consider paying a premium for takeaway food. So there's a very significant process of consolidation within that industry. So again, that is just another example of the same kind of model that companies jumped into this industry, and none of them make money. The one that was able to gather the most money, Just Eat, has been able to, Takeaway was able to take over Just Eat, and now it's trying to acquire, or perhaps already has acquired, Grubhub. So then the question is, how long will DoorDash be able to survive, for example? Of course, none of these companies make any money. So they are in a price war right now, and they're trying to drive each other out of business. Eventually, one will succeed. They'll try to raise their prices, and then it's going to be up to consumers whether they, in fact, want to take that higher price, or will they simply go to the restaurants themselves and pick up what it is they want to eat, or heaven forfend, they might actually sit inside a restaurant again. When we then think about the outlook for the wider sector, it is interesting too that within the small cap sector, the second section index in Japan is breaking out to new recovery highs. It's within a few points of posting new all-time highs, and it's generally been a lead indicator for the wider Japanese market. So the Nikkei is firming from the region of the trend mean, and this continues to look like a bull market overall. Of course, when we then think about currencies that do well, our stock markets do that do well when the currency weakens. Japan is certainly one of those, and the yen does now look like it is challenging or at least the dollar is challenging its downtrend over the course of the last 6 years, and it's right in the region of the peak from the end of the first quarter, and it does look like it has got potentially higher to go from here. So this is one dollar strength story, and so is the Thai baht. The baht was among the strongest currencies in the world in 2020, and now it's weakening, and that's also at least a partial reflection of the change in how well the country is doing in combating the coronavirus. And of course, there's the additional point that tourism hasn't quite come back as quickly as would have benefited some of these heavily reliant tourist countries like Thailand. So that is putting downward pressure on the Thai baht. And then we can think about the SET index. It's now right in the region of the upper side of that underlying range, and it's beginning to show just the beginning of some support starting to come back in. Then we can think about the Philippines. The stock market index there broke out in an emphatic fashion at the end of May, and it has clearly broken that downward bias from the beginning of this year. So there's the potential, at least, that we're going to see additional upside. But I think it is particularly important to look at these markets on a constant currency basis, because when we think about the Philippine market, it really didn't go anywhere after the peak in 2013, and on a currency adjusted basis, it just ranged. It had an awfully big decline during the pandemic and has subsequently come back up into the range. In order to demonstrate that we are back in a demand dominated environment, it's probably still got a little bit of work to do, and that's why the dollar is the linchpin for the outlook for emerging markets. So the Asia dollar index was in mildly negative territory today, and the index is holding the region of the trend mean. As long as it's doing that, and this is just a consolidation on around the peaks from back in 2018, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. If it starts pulling back below the trend mean, that will clearly break the trend, and we could be in for a much lengthier period of convalescence. The continued relative strength of the Nasdaq and the continued upside that we're seeing for companies like Nvidia, that's just an incredibly impressive breakout. And it is continuing to push on the upside. And there is no question that this isn't an acceleration. But that's rather beside the point. There's no sign either that it's over. When we look at Nvidia on a log scale chart, it's accelerating even on the log scale. There have been previous accelerations, and there have been times when it goes sideways for a lengthy period of time and then resolves on the upside. And it's been among the best performers in the Nasdaq over the course of the last decade, going from about $10 in 2010 to 800 is an extraordinarily impressive performance. And it's not over yet, but this kind of acceleration will not last indefinitely. It's going up so quickly that it is helping to pull the semiconductors index up with it. And the SOX index has pushed on to a new recovery high. Now, on both of the last occasions when it pushed to a new high, it failed. So, in order to demonstrate that this is a resumption of the uptrend and we're going to see another leg on the upside, it's going to have to hold this move. But so far, the tech sector continues to do well, and it is certainly on the back of this continued compression in yields. And then when we think about inflationary pressures, well, oil prices were down today, and this is the downside key reversal. So it suggests that we have a peak of at least near-term significance. If we get a follow-through on the downside tomorrow, well, then that would suggest that we could be in for a multi-week, potentially multi-month process of consolidation. The strength of oil prices has been one of the last men standing in terms of the inflationary pressures that have been mounting in the global economy. Oil prices have recovered significantly, more than doubling since November, and that increases the cost of producing just about everything else. So we've had a significant pullback in lumber prices, going from a peak around the 1700 area to less than 800 in here today. So this is a significant drawdown. The agricultural commodities were stronger in here today. So soybeans is starting to offer evidence of support in the region of the trend mean. And sugar prices have also started to steady. And this looks like a first step up. Well, in fact, the first step above the base was at the beginning of the year. This looks like consolidation in the region of the upper side of that range. We've also started to see some return to performance of Robusta coffee, and it pushed on to new recovery highs in here today. Arabica coffee is doing the same thing. It found support over the last couple of sessions, so this looks like a continued, at least continued potential for additional upside. This outperformance of sugar, coffee, and soybeans, that would suggest that the drought in Brazil is still very much a factor, and that the recent rains have not delivered enough of water to the area. And as long as we have drought conditions there and drought conditions in the western north or the west of North America, then that does suggest that we have the potential at least for higher commodity prices. So we have energy prices that look a little bit susceptible to some consolidation in the oil price, and we have continued upside in the agricultural portion of the market. And then we can think about natural gas prices, which have broken out, and this now looks like a clear breakout from a well-defined range with a series of higher reaction lows and support being found in the region of the trend mean. It suggests that we're going to see additional upside coming through in here. Now, of course, we can also look at the previous peaks from back in 2018 and 2014, and it's clear that when prices rise enough to make additional new drilling economic, then prices can come down with a bang. but this is looking like a clear breakout, and generally there is ample scope for natural gas to accelerate during these kinds of moves before it's eventually capped. So there's the potential that weather events are going to have inflationary pressures, and that will show up in some commodity prices, but perhaps not all commodities. And then we have the continued upward pressure on semiconductors, but I think looking at the news headlines, there is at least portions of good news coming out of that sector too. So bond investors are looking past these short-term considerations and thinking that with the potential for the economy to open back up and that growth may not come in as quickly as was initially assumed, that there is the potential for inflation to be less of an issue. But because the economy has opened up, and it might not have done as quickly as everyone wanted, but it has opened up, and tax receipts are improving, well, then that also helps the government's financial position. So it suggests that there'll be less demand for new bonds, which is also supportive of strength in the bond market. Of course, then there's the question of whether the US politicians are going to be able to get around and, in fact, pass an infrastructure bill. When we then think about, well, what's the biggest metal that does well from that? Well, copper is an obvious candidate, and the share, con or excuse me, the price continues to consolidate here above the trend mean. I find this trading activity in gold to be really intriguing. It's exceedingly rare that we see prices do nothing after two big downward dynamics. So we can look at what happened after the last ones. We've had these inert ranges. Now, of course, these ranges were inert relative to the big downward dynamics, but this range we've had recently is much less volatile than those ranges. Now, on each of the last times, the price broke downwards. And we certainly had a bigger pop on the upside this time. And there is certainly the intention of governments to print their way out of trouble, and there is certainly the scope for some excess demand for a safe haven or some insurance against the potential that currencies are going to lose their purchasing power. But there's not a great deal of urgency in that decision at present. So we do need to see some evidence. It's definitely for the bulls to prove in here that gold can not just pause, but it can pop on the upside and then push on to a new recovery high. And if we see gold trading back above $1,900, well, then that will clearly confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. It will also help to confirm that we have a higher reaction low. So we're not quite out of the woods yet, and the conditions are potentially evolving that gold will do better from here, but we're not quite there yet. Palladium prices have popped on the upside, and they're leading on the upside again. So this has been 5 out of the last 6 days on the upside. Platinum has also been doing better and is continuing to steady following 5 consecutive days on the upside. So it's now back above the trend mean. This big question about whether we're going to have inflation or deflation, I do think it's a bit of a red herring, because what we have is an exceedingly liquid environment, and that will help to inflate asset prices. And politicians and central bankers are just going to continue doing what they've been doing until they're presented with a challenge that will stop them from continuing to expand the money supply. So it suggests that, yes, there are high valuations, and there's a great deal of enthusiasm going around the market, and there are there's some evidence of bubbly activity. And obviously, we've had an exceedingly large pullback in Bitcoin. And there was a significant sell-off on Friday ahead of the weekend, and it looks like investors over the weekend used that as a buying opportunity. So it was up in a dynamic manner on both Sunday and Monday, and trading back around the 34,000 level. You have some of the biggest cheerleaders for Bitcoin backing up the truck and buying lots of it. So MicroStrategy has been extremely vocal in their claims that they are buying during this breakdown, and the share is beginning to steady in here. You also have Cathie Wood, who owns the ARK Investment Group, has also said that she's buying Bitcoin, and I suspect that it is exactly that kind of talk is helping to support the market in here. But the bigger question, of course, is that how are we going to see enough money printed to achieve the goals of all of the big Bitcoin bulls? Because they want to see the price around $100,000 or $500,000. And in order to get there, the quantity of money that will need to be printed is extremely, or just, it's extraordinary. And we would probably need a crisis greater than the pandemic to justify that quantity of money printing. So I just don't see that as a possibility in 2021. It's not that we can't see it in the future, and that there still the possibility that we can have successive additional rounds of quantitative easing, and that they will further extend the realm of the possible in terms of what can be printed and lent into existence. I think that's obviously a potential outcome, but is it a potential outcome now? That I think is the bigger question overall. An additional tailwind for the tech sector in here today was Facebook. The share was up in a dynamic manner, and it was on the back of an antitrust suit against the company being thrown out. So there's been a lot of reticence about investing in some of these companies because of the risk of antitrust, and particularly following what's happened to companies in China as a result of antitrust measures. So this was certainly a success story for Facebook in here today with getting the challenge thrown out. And it suggests that there is potential for other companies to also do well if they can get away with having near monopolies in their sectors. There is no reason why they can't continue to trend higher in what is and remains a very liquid environment. If this is a liquidity-fueled bull market overall, well, then the most important thing to monitor is the quantity of liquidity. And as long as that liquidity is available, then this uptrend will persist. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.